Diane Paulus has been artistic director at the American Repertory Theater for just over a year, and in that short time, she's been described as the most important new force in theater in Boston. We spoke with her yesterday about her first two groundbreaking productions, The Donkey Show, her interpretation of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, and Sleep No More, based on Macbeth. Today, in part two of our conversation, Diane Paulus explains why she decided to stage Gats, a word-for-word reading of The Great Gatsby, which lasts for 7 hours.
The Sister Catherine sat down beside me on the couch.
You live down on Long Island, too?
She inquired. I live at West End.
Really? I was down there at a party about a month ago at a man named Gatsby's. Do you know him?
I live next door to him.
How did you think that that might actually be a successful way of presenting this book?
Well, you know, when I first got the job, I met with my board members, and I said to them, tell me what your most memorable and extraordinary theatrical experience has been. And I went around the circle, and all of them spoke about these marathon theater experiences.
Oh, really?
Nicholas Nickleby, parts one and two, Angels in America, The Tantalus Project, which is 12 hours of Greek work, Coast of Utopia. And when they talked about them, they talked about, oh, we went and we went with friends and then we had dinner in between and we were talking about the play over the interval between the two shows. And it made me realize we have this notion in culture now that audiences don't have attention span, you know, because of the internet and video games, nobody has attention span. And I think that's really not true. Audiences don't have attention span for like a formula that a theater has to be 2.5 hours or 3 hours. And what happened in the production is you start in this kind of drab 1990s office and this guy's reading the book, picks it up out of a box, and then eventually the world of the novel takes over. And you see the transformation of all the office workers become the characters in the book. And in a way, it engages your imagination, you know, in an even more heightened way, because you're not seeing the illustration of, you know, Gatsby and the parties on Long Island. You're looking at an office with filing cabinets, but you're seeing the lives and the imagination of Fitzgerald take over these people working in this office.
You know what I think is so exciting about this way of experiencing theater is that it's both intimate, because when we read The Great Gatsby just on our own, that's exactly what's happening to us. We're being drawn into the work in a very intimate and personal way. But it's communal at the same time, because in the theater, you're actually sharing that experience with others. So
right.
I'm not sure I've heard of that kind of intimate yet communal experience being successful in the way that you've been able to make it successful at ART. So what do you think that you're doing is right, that's getting people to come back again and again?
I think people are coming back to the theater because they feel connected to what's happening on stage. All of the theater that we've done this year in the season has made a big effort and put a big emphasis on the audience's presence being part of what creates the magic of the evening, that the audience completes the event. And I think that gets really underrated in the theater right now, you know, and I think it has to do with what we've been under in the 20th century, that we come from a time of naturalism, which was very radical at the turn of the century in the early 1900s. That was a radical movement, you know, to put the audience in the dark and have them look on the stage as if they were a voyeur and they didn't exist. That was big. That was a break from sort of melodrama and vaudeville, and, you know, it was very revolutionary. But we've been through that, and film and television have taken that form and are the best at executing that form. So for me, as a producer and creator of theater now, I feel I must ask, what makes theater necessary? If theater's going to continue, what are the key ingredients of the theater? And for me, the number one key ingredient is the audience, because without the audience, there is no theater.
Diane Paulus, many people are obviously very excited about the innovation that you've brought to the ART and just how you look at theater overall with this, you know, your very passionate idea about audience being a key part. But some people, perhaps theater purists, are a little less excited about it, thinking that you're changing what it means to actually go to the theater into something that they don't want to have anything to do with. It's not that traditional experience where you're sitting in the dark and just absorbing the art that's on the stage. How do you respond to those criticisms?
Sure. I think the ART has a very particular mission, which is to expand the boundaries of theater. And that's what, as a not-for-profit institution, we're committed to. So this idea of never just resting on an assumption of what the theater is. and constantly asking, what is theater and what is the theatrical experience, is partly what we institutionally are charged to do. And what I've been committed to is trying to provide a range of experience so that I'm not programming, you know, 10 donkey shows, but there's the donkey show over here. There is Sleep No More, which is, you know, no language. And then you have something like GATS, which is 7 hours of language. And, you know, what I've been telling audiences who've come to the theater is I'm not asking everyone to say, this is what I love about theater. I'm asking audiences to come back to the ART and to engage with the work. And that's what matters. That you come, that you're present, that you're provoked, that you're engaged, that you're enraged. That's all good. It's like going to a sports game, actually, and getting upset at how the players are playing. You know, I want the audience to have that voice. That will make the theater vital.
Well, if we can for a moment, I'd like to reach back and talk a little bit about your relationship with the ART in particular, because I read that in 1990 you announced that you wanted Robert Brustein's job. He is the founding director of the ART. So 1990, that must have been back when you were attending Harvard as an undergrad.
Yes,
right?
I was at Harvard class of 1988.
So your love of the ART goes way back.
It does go way back. I came to Harvard and I was a social studies major, and I spent every waking hour doing theater. And I was haunting the halls of the ART. I went to see every show at the ART. I stole the posters from boxes in the hallway and put them up in my dorm room. And I saw all the great work that was being done at the ART in the 80s. Philip Glass, Joanna Kalaitis, Andre Serban, Julie Taymor. And I was, you know, 18, 19 years old, having my mind blown, you know, by these incredible productions, looking at what theater can be. And I remember being in New York and going to acting school. And when we finished acting school, we were sitting around all the classmates, you know, over a beer at 2 a.m. And everybody was musing, you know, where will you be in 5 years? I want to have an agent. I want to be on Broadway. I want to have a movie career. And it came around to me, and I honestly said, I want to be Robert Brustein and run the ART in Cambridge. And I think all my acting friends were like, what? What about the soap opera career that we all want? I thought, no, theater is bigger and better than that. I've always thought that the ART is the most incredible theater in America. You know, the legacy of that theater, the work that it's done over the years, the community here that it's a part of in Cambridge and Boston, the fact that Boston has all these universities. We should be at the forefront, and that's my goal of, you know, the hotbed of the future of the theater.
So it's been a year now that you've been artistic director at the ART. Do you feel like you've got a better handle on the Boston theater scene and what it is and what it might become?
Smashing these boundaries of theater, redefining what the theater experience is, has proven to be something that the audience, especially a new demographic of audience, has welcomed. This year was an experiment, and having experienced the audience's excitement, it's encouraged us to continue programming in this way.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I wonder, when it comes to how you look at what your real competition is out there, do you see that your competition is actually things like the iPhone and Hulu and all the ways that people can get somewhat immersive, entertaining experiences that have nothing to do with paying for a ticket and entering the ART?
The fact that the theater might not be able to compete well with people's electronic devices is really a problem. You know, the theater is the ultimate interactive event. And I think the more we have electronic media and our computer laptops and all the hours we spend alone, you know, with the internet, is going to push people more and more to the social experience of going to the theater. And, you know, for instance, at Oberon, which is our club venue now, where the Donkey Show plays and where Amanda Palmer is going to be doing a show with us next year, and Serge Tankian. These are venues where we're exploring, you know, the breaking down of boundaries, you know. You go to every other live event, whether it's a nightclub, a rock concert, you know, a sporting event, and guess what? You have your phone with you. You can call your friend or your mom and say, I'm here and it's great, listen. And you hold your phone up, or you take a little video and then you put it on your Facebook page. And, you know, the theater is gradually breaking open. I mean, even, you know, I direct Hair on Broadway. We now have a post-Stant show on a Broadway stage that is put on the internet every night. I mean, that was a big deal for, like, the unions in New York mm-hmm. and Broadway to allow that. But I think we're understanding that rather than thinking in opposition to those trends in the world, that actually we have something to offer. The whole point of social media and all that is that people want something to talk about and share. You have to have the content. We have to have these communal things that then we can talk about and debate about.
Diane Paulus, Artistic Director of the ART, it's been such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And by the way, Diane Paulus' production of Sleep No More was the most profitable production in ART's 30-year history. You can also see a mini video documentary of GATS on our website, WBUR.org. And one last note. Many of you will know this voice.
We're throwing a rosy ribbon between the radio that you're listening to and the roses, the romance in your life.
It belongs, of course, to that English lady who pops up during WBUR's fundraisers. But to us, she's so much more than just that English lady. Her name is Anna Benstead. She's WBUR Assistant Program Manager, and today she's leaving us for new opportunities in Europe. For over a decade, Anna has been the behind-the-scenes soul of WBUR. She produced nationally award-winning documentaries on end-of-life care and the vanishing middle class. She's been the steady hand at the tiller in developing much of WBUR's outstanding national and local programming, including Radio Boston. But beyond her unflappable professionalism, for many of us, Anna has been something more. Her inexhaustible passion, tenacity, brilliance, tough head, and kind heart have made her a friend, an example to follow, and for me, a personal mentor. WBUR is much stronger because of her work here. Anna, we wish you the most wonderful adventures in your new life in Italy, and from all of us at WBUR, I'd just like to say ciao bellissima e tantissimi grazie. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. Our program is produced by Adam Ragusea, Jessica Alpert, and Jennifer Donaldson. Today we also say goodbye to our mighty intern, Tom Urell. Thank you so much, Tom. Our web reporter is Andrew Phelps. Tim Skog is our technical director. Special thanks this week to John Parati and Michael Garth for their engineering assistance as well. The senior producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Enjoy the weekend and join us next week for more Radio Boston.